From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 415, recorded live Thursday, March 13, 2014. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, empowering over 1 million developers to create compelling app experiences across any screen. Learn more at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Steve Beauregard about Bitcoin.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm chatting with Steve Beauregard, founder and CEO at GoCoin, and I want to understand Bitcoin and why I should care. Steve, why is everyone going insane about Bitcoin right now?
Oh, thanks for having me, Scott. Well, you know, the primary reason is if you look at the world, 75% of the people in the world can't participate online in commerce or buy products, and Bitcoin changes that. So it's the on-ramp to get the unbanked and the people that don't have credit cards participating on the internet.
Is that really it? It's just that there are people who need to have a place to hold money, and they don't have an account, they don't have a Visa card, they don't have a way to a PayPal account.
Yeah, in many cases, the unbanked population is huge, and most of these people have computers, they have smartphones, and but they don't have bank accounts, and that's a lot of the developing countries have that problem. So a lot of people also, they want Bitcoin for the speculative purposes in the U.S. and in Europe. However, the utility of the invention is really far greater in the developing countries.
Don't you think, though, that in the last kind of couple of months, it's pretty clear that it's techies that do this? Do you really think that developing countries and people out there have any idea what Bitcoin is? I mean, you're describing a world that seems a little bit farther in the future when it's more mainstream.
Yeah, and I am describing the future, and it is mostly technical people today that have Bitcoin, or people that had extra hardware laying around, and they ran a miner and they developed they got coins, and yes, those are a lot of the people that have it today. However, they've really provided the backbone, if you will, of the Bitcoin network, such that it will support now this worldwide peer-to-peer network of payments.
Mm-hmm. What about other alternative non-Bitcoin things in developing worlds? Like, I know Kenya has their own digital currency that's used where they send via SMS. Don't you think that those things that are more entrenched in an emerging economy, like, for example, Kenya, have a better chance of winning?
Well, the M-Pesa is very interesting because many times the fees with the M-Pesa in Kenya can be as high as 40%. So, and yet the people are still using it and adopting it, and it really shows that they need the utility. So, in a world where I believe that pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered, I think 40% is way too rich for a fee. Whereas Bitcoin, literally, you can have a transaction for pennies.
Mm. So you're saying that M-Pesa, because it has relationships with Safaricom, the mobile networking people over there, and Vodafone, that it really is an example of the rich taking advantage of the poor.
Yeah, in many cases. But don't get me wrong, it does have a lot of utility, and that's oftentimes the signs of an early market. They found an opportunity. Yet, anytime somebody starts making money with a system like that, it's going to bring in innovation, and innovators are going to come in and find better, cheaper ways to do things that can take advantage of it.
I've heard people describe Bitcoin as the kind of the democratization of currency, and kind of releasing the idea of money out into the world and getting the governments out of the way.
Certainly, one of the goals of it is to create a currency that can't be devalued by just printing more and printing more and printing more. But I don't see it as necessarily competitive with government issued currencies. I think they're going to coexist for some time to come. And I think that's the right way to think about it. But it is the people's money. It is giving you control back over your own credit situation and your own what you've earned.
Okay, so you seem like you have a much more kind of measured business person's perspective on this. I hear a lot of kind of revolutionary types online that are thinking like, this is it, this is the end, it's the people's money, it's the end of currency and the military-industrial complex. And then I'm hearing people like you that are like, well, this is another exchange, another way for us to move money from place to place.
Yeah, and more efficient way to do that. I revert back to the rule of going to Las Vegas, the house always wins. So if you keep in perspective that the house will win, don't think that you're going to get away with not paying taxes. Don't think you're going to get away with cutting the governments out of being in control of this. Because I don't take that. I don't subscribe to that.
Let's talk a little bit about this, the process and the currency. When I have a wallet, that's the first thing I need to do to get Bitcoin, right? I have to have a wallet. And this is a file. It's just a file on my device somewhere, on my computer, on my phone.
Yeah, it's a set of programs, and inside of that wallet there is a private key and a public key. So think of the public key like your routing number at your bank. Anybody, you have no problem giving that out to somebody, saying, here's my routing number, wire money to my account. But your private key is like your PIN. You don't give that to anybody. That's the way that you can then access your money and transact. So that's the private key, which is stored. And most, modern wallets have that file encrypted on the local machine so they can't, you require a password to get to it.
Okay. And that wallet, that file, it is truly a wallet in the sense of don't lose your wallet.
Absolutely. It's actually the private key is really the component you can't lose. So that should be backed up, put away in a safe. You can even print out that key and store it in multiple places. But anybody who can get access to that key can access your coins anywhere.
Okay. If I do lose my wallet, but I have my private key, I understand that in Bitcoin there's this concept of the transaction history. That can I recover my wallet as long as I have the private key?
Absolutely. Yep. That's the whole power, is you can inject that private key into a different wallet, and voila, your access to your money is restored.
So my public address, I understand this concept of addressing. People are saying, what's your public address? It looks like it's a kind of a GUID, a globally unique identifier. And that's not something I have to be fearful of. I can give it to anyone, put it on Twitter.
That's right. That's right. And that's a 34 character string and very, uppercase, lowercase numbers embedded. And that string is your public address, and you can send money, or anybody can send money to that address.
And is that something that could run out? Are there enough of those for all the people in the world? Everyone can have one?
No, you would never run out. I can't quite do the math, but you take, all of the uppercase, lowercase, alphanumeric plus numbers and 34 characters long. Yeah, you have a lot of combinations.
So it is a GUID. It's a globally unique identifier.
Yes.
And when someone then sends me money, let's say I've got my public key and you're going to send me some fraction of amount of Bitcoin, you're sending it where?
So it goes into the public blockchain. So the blockchain is, there's a copy of the blockchain on every single mining computer, and it used to be a wallet, but I won't get into the detail of that. But everyone has agreed to all of the transactions in history among all of this peer-to-peer network of mining nodes. Okay, so what happens is when you send your money, that transaction gets picked up and validated by the miners and added to the blockchain. So it's like cemented in history, that particular transaction. And then the balance on your wallet will be reflected in the blockchain as well.
So there's a finite number of Bitcoins. At some point before the sun death of the universe, we will know that we found them all.
Well, it's not a matter of finding them. Every 10 minutes, 25 new Bitcoin come into existence. And that's going to go on pretty much until the year 2140. It could be a little bit longer. It could be a little bit shorter. Mm-hmm. But it's really up to the speed and how fast the mining network works. But 10 minutes is what it's designed to maintain, mm-hmm. is the degree of difficulty, so that every 10 minutes, 25 new Bitcoin are awarded to a miner.
And they're awarded because that's the protocol indicates there's this tempo to it, or because this is a math, we're trying to calculate this as fast as we can, and math dictates that this is as fast as we can make them.
No, it's really, think of it like a lottery. Each of the computers is running a certain algorithm on a block of data, mm-hmm. and it's trying to get an answer in a certain format. And when it gets it in the format that it's expect that all of the nodes are expecting, it submits it and broadcasts that it you know got the answer, and then all of the other nodes will vote. And that's where the democracy comes in. They all 51% of them say, "Oh yeah, we agree, you won." Now that person or that particular miner gets awarded, you know, 25 Bitcoin. And the way the protocol works is beyond that, in 4 years, that number gets cut in half. And it continues to get cut in half every 4 years. So most of the Bitcoin will be released early. And then as time goes by, fewer and fewer Bitcoin will be released.
Doesn't that imply that the people who got in there earlier and mined are super rich right now? And the rest of us, it's too late?
No, I wouldn't think of it that way at all. I think it really is reflective of the fact that Bitcoin price is anticipated to continue to go up. So, you know, mining right now is questionable whether it's worth it from a standpoint of paying for your power bill for the mining power. However, as the Bitcoin goes over $1,000, it will suddenly become worth it again. So, you know, it's sort of a spring effect that will happen, you know, for years and years to come.
Now, you're using the word awarded, which kind of implies a certain amount of meritocracy, and then you're saying that there's mining where there's actual work and crypto, and we need powerful computers to hunt through math space. But then you also said there's a lottery. Is this a math problem, or are we winning something?
No, let me say that. I said think of it like a lottery, and the fastest computer gets the most lottery tickets. If you think about it that way, you can sort of conceptualize. But when you get down to actually how it works, is they are trying to solve a math problem, and it's a proof of work algorithm. And it basically, once they've come up with the answer in a certain format, that's when they then have, quote, won, if you will. They won the lottery.
I see. Just use it. So you're saying that you know, I let's say I have a giant refrigerator-sized computer in my house here, and I'm mining, and you're mining, and we both get it right at the same time, then that's where the voting happens.
Exactly. Okay. That's right.
And I understand that there are a number of people who have built mines. I think there's a person either in Iceland or Finland where it's very cold and is able to build a lot of machines for it, and the weather makes it okay for him to be able to run these machines hot. It makes it cheaper to cool them. They're building right. Huge mines that are just data centers that do nothing but look for Bitcoin.
That's right. Yep.
What about this idea that the power consumed looking for them in computing is somehow more than the value of the coin, at least today?
Yeah, I think that that's something that will be a problem for some time to come. I mean, people that are running Bitcoin miners on graphics cards, they still might be getting a fraction of a penny, you know, out of it. They're not getting much money, but it's something to them. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're in an apartment where they don't pay for power, and that's part of their deal. Yeah, it's a huge waste, that situation, because anybody who's running a what they call ASIC, mm-hmm. which is a application-specific hardware, anybody who's running, you know, an old graphics card. Now, you can use graphic card for different coins, like Litecoin, for example, is scripted. So that's relying more on memory than it is on the computing power. But, you know, there's definitely a problem with power consumption. And, you know, how serious is it? I'm probably not the right one to answer that.
Sure. Is there value in me or my non-technical mom to mine? Or should we just think about it as a currency that we can use?
You know, really, if you only had a little bit of money to invest in mining and you wanted to get in the game, I would suggest you mine something else. You mine Litecoin or something that's script-based. Bitcoin mining at this point is it's to the point where it's beyond the reach of the average person mm-hmm. to do it effectively.
So before we chatted here, I went and I got I'm a Windows user, and I got a Multibit, which is a wallet for Windows, the kind of the standard wallet. And yep. It gave me I put in my very complicated passphrase, and it gave me I'm looking here, I have an address now. So I put the address on Twitter, and I said,
right.
I said, I'm learning about Bitcoin, and I just pasted my address, no request or begging. I understand that begging for Bitcoin is considered really quite poor form. And since you and I have been chatting just in the last 10 minutes here, I've received two transactions. I'm just sitting here. I didn't have to push refresh. It just shows up. I've got now 2 cents, 0.00016 BTC. A Bitcoin is worth how much right now? Because I understand that it's always fractions. Very often, these transactions are in 5-6 digit decimal points.
Yeah, it's actually 8 decimal points. Wow. But yeah, so a single Bitcoin today is in the $600 range. I haven't checked this morning, but last I looked, it was about 630. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're starting to talk in bits as opposed to in bitcoins. So, you know, we just move over a couple decimal points. So right now it would be, you would be, 620 bits per Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. And, in this particular application, and I know that there's lots, so I'm not thinking about this specific one, there's a status column. And in that status column, in this particular application, there's a pie chart, and I'm not sure what the pie chart's trying to tell me, but it's filling up. Does that mean that other parts of the blockchain are starting to learn about the fact that I just got 2 cents worth of Bitcoin?
That's right. That's it's validating the transactions. So as the pie gets filled, once it gets completely full, I think it turns to a check mark or something in multibit, mm-hmm. and then you know that yes, that has been validated by the blockchain. And typically the gold standard is, you know, when you get 6 validations, that's the point at which the transaction is considered, you know, completed.
So this almost feels like BitTorrent, where everyone's kind of working together and voting and chatting, and it's very conversational, but we're all trying to just agree that something is the case.
Yeah, it's very much like BitTorrent in that it's a peer-to-peer network. Everyone has a copy of of the same blockchain, and that's a good analogy, actually.
Mm-hmm. And is this these very kind people on Twitter that are helping me learn about Bitcoin who've given me this penny? You said that there's transactional fees. Who was there a fraction of a Bitcoin that was taken out when this person sent me these cents?
Well, there could be. Now that really depends on the sender. The sender has the option to include a transaction fee, and if they don't, then they run the risk of the miner not picking it up. So there's 2 ways that the miners make revenue. The first one is the contest that we talked about, or being winning a block and being rewarded with 25 Bitcoin. The second is they can be rewarded with transaction fees by validating your transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So if the sender has the good sense to put a little transaction fee reward in there, for the miner, it's more apt to be picked up more quickly. And the larger the amount of the fee, the faster it's going to be picked up by miners.
So I'm looking here at blockchain.info, and it looks like the person who sent me this appears to be in Germany. There's a map there. Is there any way for me to know who this person is?
Not really. No, I mean, they could have put a little note inside of there and sent you a note saying, making a comment, hey, this is Nimrod in Germany, and I'm sending you a Bitcoin just to get used to it. Thanks for your show.
Mm-hmm.
But if they haven't, there's really not an easy way to connect to who exactly sent that Bitcoin to you. However, over time, I do believe that, once you can identify a few wallets, it probably won't be that difficult to unravel connections to other wallets. So, and I think they've proven through law enforcement with the case of the Silk Road that it really, it's not really anonymous. A lot of people like to speak of Bitcoin as being an anonymous protocol, an anonymous wallet, but actually it's very public in that the ledger has a copy of every transaction.
Mm-hmm. And when you nail it down to an individual, is it when they change it from Bitcoin into a country currency when things become less anonymous, or is it not anonymous even now when it's in the chain?
Well, I think you do have the IP address, so in so much that you can trace back to an IP address, so you can see where that transaction took place or where that person sent from,
mm-hmm.
At least down to the IP address. Now they can do things to obscure their IP address and so forth through something like Tor or things of that nature. But for most people using Bitcoin for legitimate purposes, I wouldn't think to go through that kind of a hoop just to send Bitcoin.
We're starting to see a lot more Bitcoin comments show up in popular press. It's not necessarily a nerd thing anymore, and I'm even seeing it on television shows. There's a TV show on Fox called Almost Human that's placed in the far future, maybe 50 to 100 years in the future, and almost every week on the future, they come upon some criminal and they find the future equivalent of a thumb drive on him, and they say, "Oh, he's got Bitcoin in his pocket. How much is on it?" This has happened consistently. So even my parents know what Bitcoin is in the context of sci-fi. But what I think is interesting about that showing up on a TV show like Almost Human is that it's a mainstream recognition that this may be around for a long time. And since you're now a founder of a Bitcoin based company, you're bullish on this. This is happening and it's not going anywhere.
Absolutely. In fact, at GoCoin, we're a merchant processor, and we have a lot of companies that come to us, and they're very interested in taking Bitcoin as payment. And sometimes I was speaking with folks at Zynga yesterday, and he said, we really haven't had the uptake that we would have expected, mm-hmm. because most of our audience are women, housewives oftentimes that are on playing games, and they really don't have Bitcoin yet. So I submit that the tipping point is going to be an episode of something like, Housewives of Beverly Hills, where they show that a housewife has discovered that she can, buy all these things with Bitcoin and not have it show up on her credit card. And so I think that's the kind of thing that it's going to take for awareness, that people start to see that some of the utility, that although it's not completely anonymous, if somebody really wants to trace you down, however, by and large, it's almost as anonymous as cash in terms of, where you spend it and, following the trail.
But it sounds like I shouldn't look at Bitcoin as an anonymous thing in the context of that's not a feature that we really want to promote. Like, yeah, if you want to move money around and be sneaky, Bitcoin's the way.
Yeah, you definitely not. I think, cash is still king when it comes to that type of thing. So I think if there's a criminal that wants to operate in Bitcoin, that they're in the wrong place. I think that's a big mistake, because the ledger's out there. And I think of it this way. Remember the Boston Strangler case, where recently they gathered some DNA evidence 30 years ago. And at the time, they didn't have the technology to really look through that evidence and be able to pin that to a particular person. And then 30 years later, now they do have the technology, and they were able to conclusively prove that this was the person responsible. I think you'll see much the same kind of technologies with Bitcoin. Although it's hard today to connect a wallet to a person, believe me, there's people out there working on it, and they'll be able to very quickly sort of put the puzzle back together.
So speaking specifically about GoCoin, your company, I understand that there's a lot of complaints amongst smaller merchants that PayPal might hold your money sometimes, and PayPal is maybe not a great solution. That was supposed to be the way for the people to be able to hold money and accept money. But now, if there's any kind of fraud, PayPal will freeze your account. So there's concern about that. There's Visa fees. Is GoCoin and is Bitcoin a solution for maybe smaller merchants in the future to kind of be able to get their money and receive and accept currency over the web?
Absolutely. And I see it solving a number of problems. You hit the nail on the head with the monopoly that the credit cards and the PayPals have on online sales and so forth, and that power of just freezing your account and freezing your money. With Bitcoin, the beauty of it is you don't have a chargeback. When you've sent the payment through, all sales are final. And so there's no reason for us to have to hold the payment up of the merchant, unless there's some sort of an escrow service or something that everyone's agreed to. The money's been received. So think of the person in Nigeria that may want to buy something online. There's no way they can use a credit card. There's no company that would take a credit card from Nigeria. However, if they have Bitcoin and they want to have some goods shipped to them, there's no reason they can't push the money there. And now that the merchant has the money, they can ship the goods in. So that's what I mean by it opens up a lot of market. The other thing it really does is think about a credit card purchase of $5. So you've got a 3-4% fee that they're going to charge, and then they're going to add 30 cents per transaction. Well, very quickly, you've completely eroded that value of the transaction. With Bitcoin, we're just charging 1% flat rate. So now you're going to be able to do a $5 transaction for all of 50 cents.
Mm-hmm. And is that how GoCoin will make money? It's just a flat 1%, and that's how that's the future?
Well, yeah, that's part of the equation. Then, of course, we take the Bitcoin in, we are trading it at on different exchanges, and we'll find ways to optimize how and when we trade. And so beyond just the 1% we make as a transaction fee, we hopefully can optimize that and do a bit better than that.
I see. So like any currency where you're holding it and it's going to sit with you for a while, there's opportunities for investment at scale and all the different kinds of things that when, you know, my credit union has my money right now, and I have no doubt they're making money on holding my money and moving my money from place to place.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we probably trade a lot more quickly than that because we have to mitigate our risk. So, you know, as we take coins in, we trade it pretty quickly. But, you know, there's many exchanges around the world, and the price that we give on the invoice is going to be an average of the different exchanges. Mm-hmm.
And you've got a developer kit for people who have Ruby or Java or .NET, whatever. Someone can go and make a shopping cart that accepts Bitcoin, and then you'll basically do all the work for them, right?
That's right. That's right. So think of it like, you know, the old days of e-commerce when, you know, the biggest pain was the last mile when you had to connect the merchant services up and do all of the testing and you know, get your bank accounts and go through all of the stuff at the bank. You know, we eliminate all of those kinds of issues. So we've got a very, very straightforward set of APIs, client libraries for the major languages, plugins for major shopping carts like Magento and WooCommerce and so forth. And, you know, we're making the on-ramps very simple. And then in terms of opening their merchant account, they literally, you know, fill out a form on our site. They upload some documentation to show that they're a legitimate, valid business. And then they're accepting Bitcoin. We're actually accepting it for them and paying them out in cash.
And it looks like you've got all of this on GitHub. You've got and it's actively being worked on. I mean, I see some of these have been updated just hours ago.
That's right. That's right. We got a really strong technical team. You know, working from various parts around the globe. We have some developers in India, some developers in Argentina, and some in the U.S. So
you're handling the conversion as well. You're not just a middleman, but you have the ability to pay me in dollars. Is that what you just said?
That's right. That's right. So you can you as a merchant can opt to take your payment in Bitcoin, Litecoin. You can opt to take your payment in your local currency.
What is Litecoin, and why, if Bitcoin is the way to move money, why do I need Kanye West coin and all these other kind of alternative coins?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, interesting. Litecoin, the founder of Litecoin, Charlie Lee, you would call him the inventor. He basically took the open source blockchain code and forked the code and made a couple of significant changes. The first change he made was he made it 4 times faster. So a block gets mined every 2.5 minutes as opposed to 10 minutes on average. The second thing he did was, rather than using SHA-256, he used script-based mining, which is more memory intensive. And that sort of made an opportunity for those that missed out on the early days of mining Bitcoin to be able to mine Litecoin. And so a lot of the mining power as far back as a year ago started going over to Litecoin. And the other thing he did is he did not pre-mine the blocks. So he made it fair for everybody. He suddenly said, hey, we're going to start a new coin and ready, set, go. And he didn't pre-mine a bunch of blocks and have a bunch, you know, sitting in his pocket at the start. So many coins, those are the questions you need to ask when you look at a coin. Was it pre-mined? Has somebody sort of gamed the system by you know, having a bunch of it already in their pocket before they even start? And then you also want to make sure that they're open source code and that they've published it up to GitHub or somewhere where everybody can see the code, because some of the coins out there are not open source. And so you don't know exactly what's happening behind the curtain.
So it sounds like there's kind of a long tail. I mean, you've got Bitcoin, you've got Litecoin that's got a, you know, market space of almost $500 million. And then it pretty much tails off very quickly from there.
Yeah, and I believe, I truly believe that every coin has a different user base, and I think the people that have Litecoin are probably going to be a bit more apt to spend it. I believe if you use the gold and silver analogy, you know, gold is more the standard storage of value, and there's a lot of speculators that are hoarding Bitcoin but not really willing to transact with it. And my thesis is that I believe that Litecoin is going to be more transactional and more people will be apt to spend it.
Fantastic. And people can learn about GoCoin, go up. There's a merchant sign up. There's API docs. It's all up on GitHub. They can get involved really, really quickly.
Absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate you chatting with me today and setting me straight. I've got now 2 cents, so I'm on my way.
Hey, send me your link. I'll send you some more Bitcoin right away.
Very cool. Thank you so much, Steve Beauregard from GoCoin. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.